Well, good morning and welcome to the nation's capital on this a little bit crispy morning. A nation's capital, apparently Canada was ranked number one in the country, number one rather in the world. I'm not sure what exactly all the vote was about, but nonetheless, we are excited, not about necessarily living in Canada, while that's a great thing, but about worshiping our great God this morning. I'm so grateful to be able to have this online service and to be able to join in a song with people from literally all across the world, be it from Denver, London, New York, Chicago. They're week after week where we can feel in solidarity as we worship our great God in song with brothers and sisters all across the world. You know, I just wanna let you guys know that I know there are people not only who joined us in song, so to speak, but there are people literally all across the world that are joining us in worship this morning, and some even later on will even listen to this, and it's not gonna be morning where you are, or maybe some of you, it's not already morning where you are. I know there are people from the Philippines, from certain countries in Africa. There are Europeans that have joined us. And of course, we have our faith community here in Ottawa. We certainly want to welcome you this morning, and I trust that you're going to have a great time. Just a little note, usually for the last, actually for the last, this entire year, our brothers and sisters in Halifax has been joining us for our service. And as many of you may know, Halifax is currently seeking a full-time couple to be able to minister to them. And they've got some candidates this morning. There's a couple, Sean and Joyce, that's actually preaching the word there this morning in fellowship. And hopefully we are praying that God really meets the need of that congregation. And soon they'll be able to have their own faith community, and so that they can be in connection with one another. So I just want to let you guys know, they know they haven't deserted us. They just wanted me to mention that to you so that you know where they are this morning. I love the welcome from a couple of the people here who are part of this faith community. You know, we just want to let people know who we are. You know, for the last number of weeks, we've had people who are part of this congregation just welcome us in some way, shape, or form, talk a little bit about themselves, maybe say a little prayer. So we trust that you're even getting to be connected with us as we worship our great God. You know, if you live in Ontario, Canada, we did receive good news this week as we're going into a further lockdown, even with some tighter measures for the next 3 weeks. But, you know, we are people of faith, and we are going to be people who, irrespective of the environment or the situation, we are going to cling on to our God and really be hopeful, because this will end soon. I really believe it will. And then we're going to be able to gather again, not only physically, but emotionally and socially, and have our needs be met this morning. You know, the scripture does talk to us about loving God with all of our heart, mind, soul, and strength. So I have a little bit of a goal this morning to inspire your heart, to inspect your soul, to even challenge your mind, and maybe lift you out of your seat. And ultimately, as the title of the sermon is, maybe throwing yourself at Jesus' feet. That's the title of the sermon this morning. He threw himself at Jesus' feet. You know, our goal this morning is through some stories, through some personal stories, through some expounding on the scriptures and unpacking the scriptures and creating a context for the scriptures. Our goal is to inspire, inspect, and really ask us, how are we doing? I'll share a little bit of story here, and then I'll talk a little bit about the fact that Jesus is our Savior and what our response ought to be to that. I remember when I was dating Melanie, and I often use examples of that because it at least helps people to connect in some way, shape, or form in terms of relationships, right? And you can have use these examples either in marital relationship, family relationships, father, son, mother, son, with our children, with our siblings, with our parents, and so on and so forth. But I want to paint a picture this morning. When I was dating Melanie, I tried to find out what she liked, what she enjoyed, what she treasured, sometimes what she needed, sometimes what she wanted. I wanted to know her. I wanted to maybe do something for her that made her smile or happy or lift her spirits or just get her to feel good. And so one of the ways that I did that, or many ways that I did that, I found out even from her friends, her roommates, sneaking around, observing. I wanted to find out about her. And I wanted to do something that says, let me find out what she likes. What color does she like? What is her favorite food? What movies does she like? What are her idiosyncrasies? And as the relationship developed, I asked her roommates about what is the size of her ring finger? Does she like a cluster of diamonds for her engagement ring, or does she want a solitaire? And so I sought and I dug and I excavated, what is this woman all about? Because I wanted to do something that when I give it to her, or when I wrote her, or when we went out, it pleased her. Not because she put any pressure on me, but because this is what I wanted to do. Because I loved her. Because I appreciate her. Because I love her, I wanted to express to her and not just keep it in here, if you know what I'm saying. I wanted to let people know that I was not ashamed of her, that I was going to embrace her, that this woman means that much to me. That's what we've been trying to do in regard to looking and finding out about Jesus as he interacted with people. And I saw her interaction. What are her idiosyncrasies? What does she like? What does she appreciate? What does she value? Now, if that's what I do about the woman that I was dating and courting and ultimately getting engaged to and being married to, that's what we've been trying to do with Jesus. As we're trying to look at so many different angles And who this Jesus is, and what is he like, and what does he appreciate? What does he elevate? What does he lift up? What does he recognize? What brings him joy? What gets his attention? What does he recognize? Luke chapter 17 gives us a little bit of insight into this. And if you've been with us in any period of time, what we have done in the last, really for this year, is look at some interactions with Jesus to find out more about him. In Luke chapter 17 and verse 11, we'll read this from verses 11 through 19. Now, on his way to Jerusalem, Jesus traveled along the border between Samaria and Galilee. As he was going into a village, 10 men who had leprosy met him. They stood at a distance and called out in a loud voice, "Jesus, Master, have pity on us." When he saw them, he said, "Go show yourself to the priests." And as they went, they were cleansed. One of them, when he saw he was healed, came back, praising God in a loud voice. He threw himself at Jesus' feet and thanked him. And he was a Samaritan. Jesus asked, "Were not all 10 cleansed? Where are the other 9? Has no one returned to give praise to to God except this foreigner?" Then he said to him, "Rise and go. Your faith has made you well." Well, here is this interaction, and we're going to spend a few minutes here delving into this to see and understand if we claim to love Jesus, or if we want to love Jesus, and we want to get to know Jesus, one of the best ways is actually to look at his encounters with people, to see what he was like, and certainly what he likes. The context of this passage is actually when Jesus was going to Jerusalem. And if you know anything about the story of Jesus, I'll just tell you, he was going there to ultimately meet his death. He knew that this was his destiny, and so he is heading back now for his final journey to Jerusalem. And so he's passing by Judea, Galilee and Samaria. And this journey actually began in Luke chapter 9. And so he's teaching a whole bunch of stuff that's going on here. Interestingly, in this story, none of the so-called 12 disciples, apostles, were involved in the telling of this narrative that Luke decides to tell us. That's an interesting thing. This story is only found in Luke. Now, Jesus healed lepers in other passages and other books in the Bible, but in particular, this is the only one that's found in the book of Luke. Now, a little bit of context of this passage is important for us to understand what is going on here. So, Jesus, of course, he's going from place to place, and we'll see why Samaria is a little bit, it was mentioned here. It doesn't say specifically what village, it just says going into a village. Apparently, Luke didn't think it was important to tell us what village it was, but that what it was a village. And so we see the story that there were 10 lepers and people who had leprosy who were there in as Jesus was heading through the border towns of Samaria and Galilee. Well, what's important about this is to understand a little bit of context that lepers were, of course, many of you have probably heard this before, but let me bring it into context. Lepers was a people who needed to be ostracized, who needed to be segregated from the rest of the society because they had this disease that was very infectious. Leprosy was not a very attractive, as a matter of fact, a lot of times it was the rotting of flesh, and you could actually smell someone. And so one of the things there is twofold, why they were needed to be by themselves. was first that it was not very presentable and it was not very aromatic, but also was very infectious. And so were literally they were by themselves. Now, oftentimes, on the other hand, they were near a city because that's they couldn't work for a living, of course. And so one of the great ways that they actually made a living or actually were able to live, I should say, is because they were beggars. And so they would beg people. And ultimately, if someone inadvertently was heading their way and someone didn't realize that they were leprous, then, you know, because a lot of times they cover themselves, people may or may not realize if they were not in a community or maybe if they were by themselves, they will say, unclean, unclean. That was part of their responsibility to tell people, hey, I have a very infectious disease. And so the idea of being a leper was more than just the physical, but there was the social, the emotional, not to mention not being able to go to a particular place and worship because of that fact. You know, there are a lot of people today, even when we come back together, that have difficulty worshiping. I remember I've been parts of congregations where the singing was so resounding that when it was singing time, they certainly couldn't be near the speaker. Sometimes they would have to leave the facility and go outside and just hear an echo or a faint sound of the music. There are some people who have social disorders and have difficulty being in a crowd. And so maybe not to this extent, but there are certain situations where that's the case. These guys certainly were ostracized. And one of the things about a leper, when they were healed, however they were healed, interesting to know, they needed to go show themselves to the priest, as found in the book of Leviticus. And the priests, interestingly, became like health inspectors. They inspected whether or not this person was able to go back into the community and socialize and physically connect with people again. They were the ones who gave the okay for that to happen. So that's there is the context of this story. So obviously, like I mentioned, this is the back end of the ministry of Jesus. Without a doubt, he was renowned of doing a lot of miracles. If you notice, there's a lot of people who follow Jesus a lot of times because they were miracle seekers. They were a sign. They loved the signs. There were wonder worshipers, like we've talked about before, sign seeker, miracle marvelers, right? And they loved the sideshow aspect of it. These guys didn't care about the sideshow per se. They heard about Jesus. And for whatever reason, after Jesus entered into the city, these guys cried out in a loud voice, Jesus, Master, have pity on us. You know, a lot of times when you are in a desperate situation, the surroundings, the decor doesn't really matter. You just want to get healed. Now, I'm not trying to use the comparison of a severe toothache in my being the same as leprosy, but the idea that what I wanted to paint here is that when I was a younger man, I remember one time being in so much pain, I rushed into a Shopper's Drug Mart, literally running in the store, didn't care what people were thinking or feeling, threw myself over the counter, so to speak, leaning on the counter. And I said, I have an amazing toothache. I need some drugs. Those were my exact words. The people thought, who is this person? Honestly, I didn't care what they were thinking and what they were feeling. What I was more concerned about was not people's reaction, was to deal about my desperate situation. Decor, lining up was not at the forefront of my mind. These guys were in such a situation with their leprosy that they didn't care. They're shouting in a loud voice. Now, interestingly, Jesus says to them, here's something that is quite remarkable. He says, when he saw them, he says, go you show yourselves to the priest. Well, like I mentioned earlier, he didn't say that you were healed. He didn't touch them. We saw that he touched other lepers when he healed them for whatever reason. That's what he instructed them to do. And so, as we know, as they went, so they told them, and it's interesting, they actually exercised some faith. They said, okay, well, this is what he said for us to do. We know that he's done a rather remarkable amount of stuff, and so we're just going to do what he tells us. And so they didn't even get to the priest yet, and it says clearly, as they went, they were cleansed. And I don't know exactly what that looked like. What did the itching stop? Did the smell stop? Did they literally see the sores becoming better? You know, in the book of 2 Kings, when Naaman was healed of leprosy, the Bible says that his skin became that of a young boy. How did it happen? I don't know, but it's clear that they didn't even get to the point of the priest yet. And then something remarkable happens. One of the men realized that he was cleansed, that he was healed. He came back to God. He came back rather praising God in a loud voice. And he threw himself at the feet of Jesus and thanked him. And Luke decides to help us to understand that he was a Samaritan. Well, what's the issue here with being a Samaritan? The issue is that the Samaritans, if you know anything about it, I'll just give a real brief history here. There were 12 tribes of Israel, and 10 to one side and 2 to another side. And then they were captive. They were, held in captivity by the Assyrians. And then there's a certain set of people who stayed in one of the cities, and then other foreigners came. They started then intermingling their marriages, so to speak, tainting the Israelites, and they became known as half-breeds. And they were looked at and looked down at. They looked at the Torah in a different way. They interpreted the Torah in a different way. They worshiped on a different mountain. They did not think Jerusalem was the place, but rather Mount Gerizim instead. As a matter of fact, the Samaritans became such a refuge to the people, to the Jews, that a lot of times people would cross the street, the modern day cross the street, so as to not be on the same side with the Samaritans. Interestingly, sometimes people would walk around an entire town, several kilometers, just to avoid even stepping foot in Samaria. What's the point that I'm trying to make here? The idea of being a Samaritan, mingling with the Jews, because there were 10 of them. Presumably, none of them were Jews, and one was a Samaritan. It's amazing how misery loves company. It's amazing what misery, what strange bedfellows misery makes. And yet, these 10 lepers who were common, their only commonality was that they were torn and shredded in their body. And that was what brought these Samaritans and Jews together. Interesting thing to note. It's amazing that they cried out, "Jesus, have mercy on us." Someone remarked, and he said, "One can never repay God's mercy. We can only respond to the mercy of God." And so this guy received the mercy of God, all 10 of them actually, because that's what they asked for. And it's clear that it was more than just being healed of this disease. And so what happens with this guy was quite remarkable. There's social and spiritual implications by the fact when it says that they stood at a distance from him. And Jesus said, "Go show yourself to the priest." And they were cleansed. And then one of them came back. And that's what I want to spend the next few minutes on. Praising God in a loud voice. What an interesting way that Luke helps us to understand that. Why did he choose to come back? After all, Jesus said, "Go show yourself to the priest." He didn't get to the priest. Presumably, the other lepers were going to show themselves to the priest. Maybe they were so bent on obeying what Jesus said, and they didn't want to disobey, that they actually were doing what they thought they ought to do. Yet the story was told not because those nine lepers did what they ought to do, but because the Samaritan man came back falling at the feet of Jesus and giving gratitude to Jesus, recognizing who did this to him and what he did, and that his gratitude and showing gratitude was an important part of his faith. What his expression of faith was, a spirit that didn't care, just as he shouted as loudly when he was leprous. And he said, "Have mercy on me." He came back in a loud voice and praised God just as much. A little bit of context here. I don't have time to delve into this, but just before this passage, Luke helped us to understand that when you're servants of Christ, our spirit should be, "Hey, we've only done our duty. Don't go about thanking me." And so what Luke seems to address here, at least what he wanted to highlight, this is not about giving thanks to other people, or more importantly, looking for thanks from people. He's not trying to teach a gratitude class here on what are things that we ought to be thankful to other people for. Our disposition, he says, when we've done our duty, we should say, "Hey," when we've done rather what we were supposed to do, we only say we've done our duty. It's interesting. There's a lot of people who are hung up on, "Hey, he didn't thank me. Hey, she didn't thank me. Hey, did this person appreciate me?" And they're hung up on there. Their joy is hung up on, hey, I give him a really expensive birthday present or a really big Christmas present. Man, did they see the big wedding gift that I give them? I didn't even get a thank you card. Now, I'm not talking about whether or not we as individuals should be thankful. What I'm talking about is hanging our hat on people being thankful to us. And Luke says, hey, listen. That's not how we live as Christians. We don't do things to receive gratitude. We don't do things to receive thanks. That's a different lesson for another time. There's so many people whose happiness is connected to that. But when we become disciples, we've only done our duty. Anyways, what he was trying to help us to understand here. Ultimately, when we understand who Jesus is, what he's done for us, that part of our gratitude to God is expressed with feeling, with not caring what other people think. Emotive. Expressive, a humility that he falls at the feet of Jesus. Not that you should even be thankful for the church, but ultimately that Jesus ought to be so overwhelmed with gratitude. And is our response. That's what Luke tries to help us to understand here. That's what Jesus noticed. That's what Jesus appreciated. That's what Jesus recognized. This is what was elevated. This is what was important. Was the gratitude towards Jesus. The nine obeyed the Mosaic laws and were needed to go to the priest to show themselves so that they can get back into society. And they probably thought that's what they needed to do. Yet their response falls short of what the response of the Samaritan was. And it's interesting. When the Samaritan came back to Jesus and his praise of God was emotive and grateful and falling at the feet of Jesus and expressed in humility, something else he received, healing. The word there apparently is the word that's used for salvation. That this guy not only was cleansed, but ultimately his eyes got open to who Jesus was and who Jesus is and the salvation that comes through him. You know, a writer by the name of Robert Barron says this: Christianity is above all a way of seeing. Everything else in Christian life flows from and circles around the transformation of vision. Christians see differently. And that is why their prayer, their worship, the action, the whole way of being in the world has a distinctive accent and flavor. Remember this morning I said I had a small little goal of inspiring your heart, challenging your mind, lifting you up out of your seat. And perhaps ultimately follow the feet of Jesus. Let me ask you, and let me ask me, what describes me more in my gratitude towards God? The nine or the Samaritan? You know, there are many times in my life when I've been in a desperate situation where I've cried out to God in a loud voice, honestly, even very recently, and I'm very convicted about it. My wife could attest to this a few weeks ago. for about a 3 to 4 hour period, I was in bed, writhing in pain in my stomach, not knowing what is going on. But at the risk of being dramatic, I wondered if that was going to be my last night. That's how much pain it was. And for 3 to 4 hours, I literally was praying the entire time, loudly, not quietly, loudly, out loud. I quoted scriptures, I claimed promises, I just for three to four hours straight. And it subsided. You know, I did thank God a little bit after. It's almost like I expected it. It's almost like I thought, well, that's what God does with his people. My gratitude for what God had done was not commensurate when I was desperate. And I started thinking about this as I was doing sermon preparation. Am I more pleased with the gifts that God has given me than the giver itself? Does my gratitude reflect this kind of gratitude? One that is so throwing at yourself at the feet of Jesus gratitude, screaming at a loud voice, don't care what people think. Does this describe my worship? Or is this the stoic, well, decor form of, hey, I'm going to go show myself to the priest. That's what Jesus said. That's what I ought to do. I'm not talking about a gratitude that reflects necessarily in serving other people. No, that's a different story altogether. I'm talking about what Jesus elevated and highlighted and emboldened for us to see in his word. That is falling at his feet in humility. Origen of Alexander once remarked that holiness is seeing with the eyes of Christ. Chardin said with great passion that his mission as a Christian thinker was to help people see. And Thomas Aquinas said that the ultimate goal of the Christian is a beatific vision, an act of seeing. Have we been blinded? Do we understand what has been done for and to us? Praising God and thanking Jesus should go together. And the place to praise God sometimes, because we've recognized what he's done, is at the feet of Jesus. Seeing the connection between praising God and worshiping and thanking God is important. One of the most glorious places that we do that is in the communion. It's why we do it every week. The Samaritan fell at the feet of Jesus and thanked him. Could be construed as an act of worship. It's at least an act of humility. It has been said that humility is the guardian and gateway of all other virtues, and gratitude, I love this, is the first evidence of humility. And so I ask you this morning, what is more emblematic? Which more describes? If we were to put ourselves in a picture, have I challenged your mind? Have I inspired your heart? Are you inspecting your soul? Are you at the point yet where you're leaping out of your seat and falling at the feet of Jesus? I believe that's what the story was ultimately all about. Jesus, do you sense it in the spirit of Jesus? He says, hey, weren't there 10 who were cleansed? Where are the other 9? Has no one returned to give praise to God except this foreigner? And gratitude of this foreigner, and it's not why he did it, led to a different completion of healing. Man, when my soul was cleansed of sin, I didn't care what a lot of people thought. Sometimes to my detriment, but have I become so cultured, so sterile, so in the know, so palatable, so relatable, that when we look at the Samaritan, we're offended by his response? You know what I find myself sometimes doing when I read a story like that? This is what I do. I don't know if you do. Different culture. Man, Paul writes to become all things to all people, and we're in Canada now. And I mean, to be expressive about anything but hockey, and maybe for our good golfers, and you know, it's not right. But to throw herself at someone's feet, geez, Amanda, it's going to freak people out. This is what Jesus noticed. This is what he was his favorite color. This is the kind of food that he liked. He didn't like a cluster. He liked a solitaire. See what I was saying? This is the kind of movie he likes. And if we are going to know him, we got to know him well. And start doing the things and becoming what he likes and elevates. You know, it's interesting. It doesn't say that God, that Jesus took away the healing of the other 9. That's the graciousness of our God. That is the graciousness of our God. The Samaritan's act of recognition and cry for grateful praise was evident. And it's amazing to see only he was the only one whose loud voice in screaming to be healed could be heard in his praising of what Jesus did for him. You know, it's another lesson, another time, that his gratitude also opened the eyes to who he was and the salvation, that this is one that was not just another prophet, and he was not just another healer. He was God himself in the flesh. That you start seeing things when you respond to God in a way with humility and act of worship, and you throw yourself at the feet of Jesus. Hearts inspired, inspection of your soul, challenging of your mind, and lifting out of your seat and falling at the feet of Jesus. As we take the communion in our faith communities, and if you want to be part of this faith community, please join us. Connect with us. There's a way for you to do that. We have a bunch of communities all over the Ottawa area, and thankfully we can even do that online. But the communion is a time where we get in depth of what this is. May God give us the incredible grace and humility to fall at his feet. Thank you. May God bless you. We'll see you here again next week as we worship our great God at 10 a.m. See you then.